All righty. Nothing but good news today. Good news, fellas. We're just going to do the all good news. How about you?
Get a load of that stock market.
All right, I'm going to look.
That's right. John has a lot on the line.
Bragging yesterday about my Apple Pod.
That's right. Dow plunges nearly 1,200 points. Ah, that was shtick. You didn't have time to look. What do we got? Oh, yeah. Does that little red line going down mean something good or bad, John? Explain the stock market to me.
Shoot.
It'll come back.
You're
in it for the long run.
No, I should have bought a little lower. That's all.
Yeah. Right. Well, you still can. You got another 30 grand sitting around.
Well, listen, it's all on sale. That's the way you got to look at it. Right now, all the scaredy cats running that way. You run the other way.
You're running into the burning building.
That's exactly it.
Can't even spit it out.
All right, so Bellevue College apologizes after administrators altered a display of the Japanese-American incarceration. So that's a work of art, right?
That was 11-foot tall mural. It's a big thing.
And it was brought over there to Bellevue College, and it's in honor of remembrance, and that was there.
Anniversary of the Executive Order 9066.
And that was to intern Japanese
Americans. Franklin Roosevelt order to imprison Japanese Americans. Yeah, the internment camps.
Right. So somebody came along without permission from Bellevue College, I assume, and altered it and covered it up. Didn't deface it necessarily, but sort of made an unauthorized edit on the thing.
There's an explanatory note to the artwork that explained that Eastside businessmen, led by somebody named Miller Freeman, was advocating for this. And in effect, it was sort of like a reminder that we all are responsible for these kinds of things. What was at first whited out, that line about the Bellevue businessmen encouraging this kind of a thing, and then they put a laminated version of it that excised that line and taped it over. Now, it's true, that's vandalism, and should be dealt with accordingly. However, it turns out that it was somebody at at Bellevue College itself that did it, and not a student who might have taken offense for whatever reasons. It was one of the vice president of institutional advancement at Bellevue College, Gail Colston Barge. So this is an interesting kind of an administrative attack on its own mural display.
Yes. So I guess they had a problem, she, Gail, and others that were concerned, that it was singling out Mr. Miller Friedman, right?
Or the businessman. It just said that he and fellow Bellevue businessman.
Did it use his name?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, that's part of the problem then. So Miller Friedman owned a bunch of newspapers, and Miller Friedman did not like, as some other people in Bellevue did not like, Japanese there in Bellevue that had done a lot of the hard work removing the big stumps and getting the land ready and farming for strawberries and other things like that. And 1917, 1918, 1919 were advocating for the fact that we don't necessarily want Japanese people here. It was Miller Friedman that said oil and water does not mix. And he owned a bunch of newspapers. So he was sort of seen as agitating the unrest. We don't want Japanese people living here in Bellevue. We don't want Japanese people here coming to America. They're not going to mix with us. They never will. Let's not accept them. It's basically the tenet of 1919, 1920. Had Woodrow Wilson was big into eugenics and wanted to keep the races separate, wanted to kill
That's
people
right.
that weren't that smart. You had all those people that were part of this whole thing of keeping races apart, and you don't mix anybody together. If you're an American, you're American true blue.
That's right. So it's a pretty racist stance, but at least by today's standards. Seattle Daily Times in 1942 where it was quoting Miller Freeman, talking about Japanese Americans were in the United States by, quote, fraud, deception, and collusion, and came here to colonize the Pacific coast for Japan.
Yes.
So
he was also involved in a shipyard in Port Angeles in the 1940s during the war effort. So obviously he felt a great deal of patriotism, and he obviously still sort of stung from Pearl Harbor, even though he had this resentment for the Japanese going all the way back to 1919, 1920, all the way through. His friend Albert Johnson, who was serving the 3rd District for the state of Washington, was a great big racist, and he passed all sorts of stuff trying to kick and not having anybody that was Japanese or somebody else, not mixing. I mean, basically just disenfranchising entire groups of people.
And I think it's good that we are bringing this to light. I mean, after all, one of the great liberal presidents of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was signing these kinds of executive orders. So it's not like we're trying to single out individuals and only they are to blame. A lot of people supported this kind of thing, and that's why you have these big murals, these big pieces of artwork that was determining that. What's fascinating to me is that somebody from, again, I can't quite figure out what is the institutional advancement of Bellevue College. I mean, you're the vice president of institutional advancement. How is that advancing your institution by, in effect, defacing a mural that was designed to do what it was designed to do, which was call attention to this executive order?
Well, let's...
Fascinating, and I don't
I'm not going to defend it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But I will say this.
But you're getting close. But that's good.
I'm
that's
putting it into perspective. It's 1919, 1920, 1970. Hold on. Okay. Miller Friedman... and his...
It's Miller, by the way, not Millard. It Millard. Sounds like you're saying Millard.
Well, I'm saying because I just ate one of those stupid Girl Scout cookies and it's stuck in my teeth.
Okay.
Got to get Dr. Miller. Spore in here.
Yes.
Miller. So this was the racism that was prevalent throughout the United States for the longest time, i.e. Roosevelt, giant racist move, getting the Japanese Americans and putting them in camps. Okay.
This is World War II now, not World War
I. I got it. All right. So we're going to go from 1919, 1942, 45, all the way up. Got it. Got them all. Okay. So the thing is that a guy by the name of, what's his brother's name or his son's name?
Well, it's Kemper Freeman. If that name rings a bell.
Kemper Freeman is one of the biggest developers in Bellevue.
Miller Freeman's son was the original Kemper Freeman, but put the original Bellevue Square in. Now the Kemper Freeman that we know is his junior.
Yes.
It's his grandfather that was singled out here. But yeah, if Kemper Freeman rings a bell, he should. He's like the most important businessman on the East Side ever. And he rules the roost over there. He didn't win on – he was heavily anti-transit, by the way.
He didn't win
on that case, but he has been unbelievably successful, much to his credit. Bellevue Square is like none other around.
Yeah. So the question is, does Kemper – I don't know whether or not – Kemper donates to a tremendous amount of groups. He's extremely generous. Does he give money to Bellevue College?
Oh,
and if he gives money to Bellevue College, it's like, guys, you know, you're kind of cutting – What do you mean, Tom?
That's the connection you made.
Absolutely. So, you're crapping on my grandfather here.
Gail Colston Barge is doing the bidding of one of her biggest possible donors.
I'm just trying to connect the dots.
Yes.
Listen.
That's interesting. Maybe so. Doesn't speak well of Kemper, I don't think.
What's that? Did he tell her to do that?
Oh, I hope not.
No, let's say he didn't. Because
okay.
He's a friend
as long
of mine.
As we're
just making stuff
we're
up.
Making stuff up, that's
In fact,
right.
He probably told her don't.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm sure.
All right, so that's,
wow.
I believe that's...
You actually made a stronger condemnation of him than I would
have.
I did
not see that. Why did I have to say it? Why didn't you
say
it?
Believe me, you know, it's funny. When his name first came up, Miller Freeman, I go, boy, I wonder if he's any relation to Kemper. It took me three pages before I got to... Actually, he is.
All right.
So anyway, Gail Colston Barge, who apparently has admitted doing this, has apparently apologized... not publicly, mm-hmm. but to the artist at this point.
Okay.
So she has taken responsibility for this. I would love to find out why she did what she did and why she feels, you know, that strongly about things. But
let's speculate for a minute and then we'll dump the topic. Okay.
Okay.
Let's assume, because he does give to so many different charitable events. Let's see, he gives money to Bellevue College.
Yes.
Okay. Let's say he's a big donor to Bellevue College.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden they put up this piece of art,
mm-hmm.
and there's his grandfather's name mentioned specifically. The other crazy racists.
Well, because
racists
he was the leader.
Hold on. All the other crazy racists running around as well. You could go on and talk about Albert Johnson. Just brought him up.
Is he
did some research ahead of time. Thank God for Wikipedia.
Is he an East Sider, though? Third District?
I don't.
It doesn't sound like East Side. Because the whole point was the East Side.
I know. I'm just saying. Okay. If he gave a big check to Bellevue College and they put this artwork up and they got the grandfather's name on there, it's like, yeah, it doesn't look so good. Let's try to get rid of that. That's all.
Yeah, but especially if it's a piece of art.
Oh, art smart. Art smart, Tom. Move it on.
You're not very smart.
I'm looking to see if he donates money to Bellevue College.
Yeah.
All right, fine, Denny. Moving on. There we go. All right?
Yeah.
Great guy. Anything else?
No, you said we're moving on.
We are moving
coronavirus.
On. Coronavirus. Here we go. The coronavirus cases are mild, and that's good news and bad news. This according to the New York Times.
This is an interesting analysis. So the good news is, yes, most of us that get it, if we get it, we're going to survive 80% survival. It's like so mild. You take a couple of days off. It's mm-hmm. like a bad cold.
If you're 80 years old, what are your chances of surviving if you're 80 years old?
I would say 50%?
85%.
So you have a higher percentage of survival when you're older?
No.
80% of people that get coronavirus are considered mild cases.
85% will survive.
Yeah.
Just to show you, it's not wiping out all the people over 80.
No. Okay.
Okay.
So the point here is that because mostly it's mild, that's good. It still can be deadly, but when it hits
told
the majority
of us. I wanted to get it.
Yeah, no, I know. Hey, you're jumping. That was supposed to be our climax for the story. Do we have some sound?
Yes, I got
Because the
Cuomo.
Key is, because it's mild, it also creates other problems.
Okay, so okay. The governor, Jay Inslee, points out.
Nobody's panicking. We shouldn't be driven by fear.
When should we panic?
Governor tells me his administration was quick to get out ahead of this virus as people here watch with concern how people in other parts of the world are dealing with this outbreak.
We're listening to the national, international, and our local health officials who are telling us that we need to take this very seriously, and that's the approach that we're taking.
New numbers just out from the State Department of Health say there have been 29 people tested. 26 have come back negative, still just the one positive. And the results for two people are still pending. And 355 people are under public health supervision just as a precaution because they've come in contact with a confirmed case or they've returned from China in the last 14 days.
How prepared are we to handle this?
As prepared as we can be, and I think that's the right approach. So I'm meeting with my staff basically on a daily basis. Yesterday I talked to our experts about this, about how we can build capacity to have more people available to do the research on people who've had contacts so that if we do get a person with an infection, we can make sure we monitor everyone they've had a contact with.
As he looks at other countries such as Italy and South Korea, where there's concern in public places, he says we should brace ourselves for the possibility of having to cut down on being in crowds.
What kind of things are you talking about as far as that?
Well, I don't want people to think this is happening right now, but other communities have had to essentially reduce some of the social activities that we've had. Italy is doing that right now as a necessity.
Very hard for the Italians. They like to get close to you.
Oh,
and
they
do
I
lot
know.
Of touching,
they're very
a lot
physical.
Of hands. And yep. Yeah.
We're not at this position.
Nothing against the Italians. That's just the way they are.
It's one of the strengths of the...
Right. Yeah. A lot of hugging. A lot of kissing.
And I hope never to be in that position.
Okay, being hugged and kissed by an Italian person. That's what the governor's responding to. Okay, so Bothell School District says...
I'm going to make the decision...
This is Michelle Reed.
...that best serves the health and safety of our students, staff, and families. And if I have to err on one side or the other, I'm going to err on the side of caution. The medical direction that the staff member has received is that they are to self-quarantine at home for 14 days. So, therefore, that would not include coming to work.
Okay. I think it's Japan or something. It's closed down school until spring break or something like that, keeping
Is
everybody
that right?
separate.
Wow.
I think you're supposed to be 6 to 10 feet apart. That's what they tell you.
Okay.
And not to get it.
And you won't get it.
And then you won't. Well, that way you won't.
Because it's airborne.
Right.
Because on that cruise ship, they said it apparently was airborne, and that was part of the problem. So, I'm not sure
well,
even
10
6 feet to 10
away.
Feet. Yeah, a cough can go like 20, 30 feet. They do.
What are
they
you
show that
about?
In the commercials.
That's a sneeze. There's a big difference well, between a sneeze. A cough cannot go 30 feet. What are you, a cough Olympics? What is that? No way.
We're talking about something serious, and we're making light of it.
I'm not. No. People have died from it. I get
yes.
it. It's terrible. Here's the thing that I had seen in China.
Okay.
There are 60 million men over the age of 60 in China, and they smoke. So if you include smoking and age together, if that wipes out 5%, that would be 3 million people will lose their life. These are men over 60. Men get it more than women do. Men, half of the population of China smokes, so they sort of leave themselves open to possibly getting this.
And that's how they determine if it's mild or severe or critical is whether you get pneumonia or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of us don't. Let's just, I want to wrap up this one. Interesting point in the New York Times article, which is because it's mild, a lot of us could have it and not even know about it and not suffer much. You feel like, oh, I got a cold or I got a minor case of the flu. And we could end up corrupting a number of other people, infecting other people without us even knowing about it. And because it's so mild, it's harder to take it as seriously. Mm. You don't get everything checked. You just feel like I got a bad cold. You're not going to go into the doctor necessarily. So because of the fact that it doesn't kill most people, it might make it harder to stop and ultimately quarantine everyone. And because of that, it could spread into a population that is more vulnerable. And once it gets out into the world, it could be we could be in worse shape. But right now, it's more good news than bad news that it's mostly mild.
Got it. So okay. You.
So now, let's
no one under the age of nine has gotten it. If you are between the age of 70 and 79, about 8% die in that group. So this is the numbers overall. Here's the problem you have in Iran. They didn't tell anybody. They kept it a secret for a long time. They say 200 and some people have gotten infected. They've got big problems there because they don't trust the government. Same thing in China. They don't trust the people there. They don't trust the numbers coming out of China. So here we are in the United States, and we, starting right after 9/11, all hospitals or most of them had to sign up for a protocol involving some type of an attack. Mm-hmm. So they have been working on this thing since 2001, and they have everything in place that they need. They know exactly where they're supposed to go, who they're supposed to talk to. All of these things are in place. We, of all the countries in the world, they say that the United States is most ready for it.
And you are offering yourself up as a guinea pig.
I am.
Explain yourself, John.
Well, I'd like to have it only for promotion for the show.
Okay.
Plus, it's like the ice bucket challenge. I get it, then I give it to you, then you give it to someone else. We could raise. We should easily be able to pick up like $8,000 on a GoFundMe campaign.
Dollars, right? Yeah.
And then I'd have another story.
Yeah. It's a Civil War story.
I came down with the disease. It was nothing more than a cough at first. And a runny nose. Tom was so sure that a cough could go 30 feet, he kept his distance for quite some time. Jacob got it next. And it killed him. Actually, he didn't die. He took off for a week like Tom. That's all I got.
Okay. Thank you, Sean.
Garrison isn't allowed on the airways anymore, I thought.
I'm not allowed on the airways anymore. I didn't mean to touch your breast, but I did.
Crowd loves Garrison.
Yeah, apparently.
I miss him.
May he rest in peace.
I miss him. I miss the poets of the day. I miss all that stuff. What are you doing? What are you all shocked for? Miley, what's wrong? Teal Mortgage, thank you very much for sponsoring this portion of the Tom and Curley Show and the first portion of the Tom and Curley Show. That means they were associated to the Garrison Keillor stuff earlier. 1-888-778-KIEL. That's Keillor Mortgage. Money being cheap and the right now, a good place to put some money, not the stock market, but in your house. Take that money out, move it around, get yourself a pre-approval letter if you head out into the marketplace. Thank you very much, Keillor Mortgage, Laura Keel, the rest of the gang over there. Couldn't care. Well, could care more. Is it possible to care more? What's that thing that always gets you? Couldn't care less?
Couldn't care less. People say, could care less. I could care less. Well, if you could care less, then you don't really care enough.
Then keep caring less.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, how about they couldn't care more. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. 1-888-778-KIEL. They couldn't
care more. They care so much that it's impossible to care any more.
Got it. Good. Thank you, Tom. Wow. Okay. Gender neutral baby clothes.
Prepositions. Next up.
Take dangling participles for four under, please, Alex. Gender neutral baby clothes. It is a quiet, radical movement going on. Little did we know that if this has been simmering for quite some time now, we have not talked about it. It's our problem.
Apparently, there is a backlash to our hyper-gendered world, John, of newborns. Huh. I was unaware of this problem, but then I'm very far away from newborns. But that starts off with a woman profiling the fact that she is trying to go buy some baby clothes. And the person who she's buying baby clothes for doesn't know the sex of the baby. Mm-hmm. And so she wants kind of like gender neutral baby clothes. And she talks about what a hypersexualized world newborns have become, that you cannot even get in the door, basically. If you go online to Amazon, apparently you first have to declare girl baby or boy baby before they even give you entree to buying infant clothing. And so it's an examination of how did this happen? Why are we so hyper-gendered when it comes to baby clothes, because 100 years ago in the Victorian days, everybody, all girls and boys, in fact, I've got, you know, ancestors. I got these old, like 1910 and 1890 shots of families, and the babies are always in these, like, they look
long,
like
dressy things.
But yeah, they're real dressy.
You can't tell with
these, Yes, like, oh, that's fascinating. Well, in Victorian times, which we always think of them as repressed sexual times, in a lot of ways they were. But they thought that it was abnormal to sexualize kids, that kids were really like angels. They were like sexless. They were not creatures that had any kind of sexual motivation. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you shouldn't gender them and accentuate whether they're a girl or a boy at that early a date. And apparently, over history, in 1910, Freud started to change all that. Freud decided that, guess what, everybody? My new theory called psychology says that we are influenced at a very early age on all sorts of matters. Mm-hmm. And if you happen to be a boy who identifies more with the mom because you're dealing with the mom more, you may grow up with mental disorders. And if you're a girl who's raised by a dad, she might identify with the male, and that's going to send off all sorts of disorders. And so at that point, people kind of got freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really changed until the 1980s when amniocentesis became so prevalent. And at that point, you could find out the gender of your baby long before the baby was born. And so once marketers got into that and you realized, oh, my God, in 3 months, I'm going to have a girl or a boy. They figured what a great marketing opportunity that is.
Right.
And so for marketing reasons, they rushed to having girl, clothes and boy clothes, even as infants.
Mm. Well, and that's it.
And so now there is a movement afoot. You know, more and more of these retailers are starting to accept gender neutral. For a lot of various reasons, but some have to do with the rise of transgender recognition. But they said, but there are other things about it that they don't want to kind of force. Like, not every boy's going to want to grow up with being a truck driver. But putting a truck on a shirt to identify him as a boy seems excessive.
I got news for you. The kid just doesn't even know. Okay?
Exactly.
Kid doesn't even know he's got a truck on.
That's
or a
right.
dinosaur on or something.
So why pay for that truck?
Because
why
it's not? Just cute. You put a truck on.
Yeah, you think it's cute. But what some parents want. No, I know the kid doesn't know. But some parents want just gender neutral. So you have something that could be worn by a boy or a girl. They also said a lot of hand-me-downs. Now, I don't know how many. I mean, in my family, we always had hand-me-downs. But I don't know how many, five kid families there are, let alone 10 or 12, but if you buy something, you can pass it down. If it's a boy to a girl to a boy to a girl, then why not have gender neutral? So there is a quiet push in the retail industry to allow for gender neutral clothes. That's what the article's about.
So they want the kid to wear gray?
Well, gray is, that's one of the unfortunate options, they say, is that, yeah, instead of, in effect, black and white, you just put gray, everything is just gray. They say, but no, right now, there are a number of companies, apparel companies that are pushing. We've got colors, everybody, because the standard would be the go-to bland clothes. No, we want colorful. We want color in our presentation, and so they're working in color.
If you put a boy in pink, then everybody assumes it's a boy. So then, how old is your girl?
No,
what's your
pink.
Girl's name?
Yeah, if they assume
right,
it's a girl.
Right, then you take your kid out. So
yes.
You put him in blue, it's a boy, and then the girl, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And at this point, they're saying, why do we need to know? Maybe the Victorians had it right on that particular score. They say, yeah, how many times have you seen it? I have seen this, where you've got this perfectly bald kid, baby, mm-hmm. and they basically put a tape, a pink bow or a blue bow on it just to identify gender. Why bother? Just put a good gray one on, John.
Or just go advanced hair in Bellevue, and they'll move the baby hair from the back of the head.
Right.
So I looked up to see where the average age was of people in England in the 1830s and 40s.
Wow. Okay,
so you could marry a 12-year-old girl.
Wow,
you could be a boy, be 14 years old, and marry. Because let's assume you're only living to 30 or something.
Well, that's true.
So then you just keep moving that time back. So then all of a sudden, she's a 12-year-old girl who's got to get married.
Yeah.
So at the age of what does she become sexualized, right?
Well,
so you try to keep it as sort of non-sexual as long as possible.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, because then you start looking at a 10-year-old as possible marriage material.
Yeah.
And you're some gross guy with a withered hand.
Yeah. I think most guys would be pretty gross to a 10-year-old girl, whether to hand or no, John. But
I threw that in just to push him over.
Yeah, I see.
Why did you always have? I always mention withered hand because I paint pictures with boards. Do you have a friend or a relative with a withered hand? Is that what it is?
It feels unnecessary.
Oh, we're going to lose the withered hand.
I'm smart
audience.
Enough with a withered hand not to have it pointed out by you for a joke every 3 months.
No, it's just like you seem overly sensitive.
No.
You're afraid that we're going to lose the withered hand audience?
I hope we do. You deserve it.
You're not going to lose them, Tom. They got nowhere to go.
You laugh
like you assume we're going to get a bunch of text messages from people with withered hands.
No, by me acknowledging what a jerk you can be to people with withered hands, I'm hoping to stop the
Every
flood.
Every 3 months I mention it. Again, I'm painting pictures. I could have mentioned something else.
That's right. You could have.
Luckily,
we should count our blessings.
You know, remember
right?
people when I was a kid? Used to have the guy with the giant heel. The one leg would be shorter than the other.
Yeah,
I don't see that as much anymore.
Yeah.
I think I could go to that.
Yeah, okay.
All
yeah.
right, so from now on...
Short-legged man.
So a gross guy looking at a 12-year-old got like a giant heel. How's that?
No, but I don't think that you need any kind of physical infirmity to make that a gross picture. You're just piling on at that point.
Is anybody still listening?
What are we talking about? I hope not.
Well, you don't have any time to get to the next topic.
Yeah, unfortunately. Right?
Because that's a long one. But gender pronouns can be tricky on campus at Harvard. I was just hoping Sean would have thrown in that annoying traffic music earlier. Why did you save us? When you see us floundering around, bring the music in.
Okay.
You want a sign? You want like an international sign for help us?
Well, I mean, I generally think that you're always floundering. And so you sometimes get a bunch of words to string together that makes sense.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So, okay, next time you're floundering, which Tom
like
never does.
Looking for the flotsam and jetsam to grab onto to sort of pull ourselves up just temporarily through the commercial break, right?
Yeah.
Like a floating tree trunk.
What are you talking about?
All right, moving on. Let's check traffic.
Flotsam, that's what he's talking about.
Here we go, the Tom and Curley Show. Write to us at MyNorthWest.com. You can text as well. That is the State Roofing text line at 98973, 98973. Come on in any door. Get a chance to be letter of the day. Heard from Withered Hand Will. Is that what his name?
Willie. And Nick also wrote in.
Who did?
Too. We got some. Should I read them? Or should we save them?
In context?
Yeah. Withered Hand Willie.
Let's save that one. Yeah, okay. We can read Nick's.
Okay, so we'll read Nick's.
Already, Nick's hasn't made letter of the day.
Yeah, Withered. Wow, I'm so offended right now. I'd turn the dial to a different radio station if only my withered hand had enough strength.
It's terrible. It is awful. Okay, why you laugh at this?
Oh man,
it's you remind me. I had a kid next to me in school, and the nun would always say, Billy Carney, stop laughing at Curly. You're only encouraging him. Because we're all sat alphabetically.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Carney, Curly.
No, but they'd be like, they would say the same thing to you. Stop laughing. You're only encouraging him. How about the attorney that explains there's so many lawsuits when it comes to music, right?
Yes.
We often do this.
Copyright music.
Every 6 months we do. Well, this sounds a lot like.
Yeah. Petty went after Sam Smith and he won millions of dollars for
copyright. And blurred lines and all that other stuff. Okay. And I think Vanilla Ice ran into some problems. So the problem is, according to this guy, this attorney.
We've discovered that there is only so many melodies. There are only so many notes that can be arranged in so many ways. And that's different than, say, visual art, where there are an infinite number of brushstrokes and an infinite number of colors and an infinite number of subjects that to accidentally do them is very difficult. Similarly, with language, the English language has 117,000 words in it. So the odds of accidentally writing the same paragraph are next to zero. In contrast, music doesn't have 117,000 words. Music has 8 notes. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And every popular melody that's ever existed and ever can exist is those 8 notes.
But what about sharps and flats?
Yeah, I think you got him there, John.
I think I did.
There
Look
was
at him
a
showing
boy.
Off. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. He explains what they do and try to solve the problem. Here we go. This is pretty nutty that this app can do this so quickly.
Fascinating.
Here we go.
So I approached my colleague Noah. I said, Noah, can you write an algorithm to be able to march through every melody that's ever existed and ever can exist? He said, yeah, I could do that. So at a rate of 300,000 melodies.
This has got to be a TED Talk.
It is.
They are the easiest laugh. Audience. Those TED Talk audiences. Also, his imitation of Noah is really bad. Listen to this again.
Yeah, I could do that. So at a rate of 300,000 melodies per second, he wrote a program to write to disk every melody that's ever existed and ever can exist. And in my hand right now is every melody that's ever existed and ever can exist. And the thing is, to be copyrighted, you don't have to do anything formal. As soon as it's written to a fixed, tangible medium, this hard drive, it's copyrighted automatically. Now, you might think at this point, are you some sort of copyright troll that's trying to take over the world? And I would say, no, I am not. Absolutely not. In fact, the opposite is true. Noah and I are songwriters ourselves. We want to make the world better for songwriters. So what we've done is we're taking everything and putting it in the public domain. We're trying to keep space open for songwriters to be able to make music.
Okay.
That's absolutely fascinating. You and I think, are both skeptical about really every single
Noah,
melody.
Really? He's a little too quick to jump on that project.
That's right. But even if they could do something like that, They say that legally, we don't know if this has any merit, that can you really copyright everything and anything? Here's the argument that if a note is just seen as a fact, you can't copyright facts.
Yes.
So if you put this note, you know, if there are only eight notes, and as you point out, there's sharps and all of that, too. But if you take eight notes, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you just give them a number. Uh-huh. That's a fact. You can then string a number of facts together to make it copyrightable. If that's really what they did with an algorithm, then that might not hold up in court as a legitimate copyright.
Plus, there's also rest and there's beats.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And someone's going to hold for two beats, or you rest for a whole note or a half note. There's also that is included in there as well. They're just simply writing out, I guess, just the sort of binary zero and one, or in this case, the eight notes in every single combination that could possibly be in.
Yes, but there must be a lot of combinations, because if they do 300,000 in a second, that already there are 300,000 melodies. What would be interesting now is if they are songwriters, do they just go and crib for their own stuff? Hey, let's see what melody 3,423 is. Let's write a song of that.
And then grab that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do people that do that, woo! Like, only at concerts and stuff do people make that noise. You notice that the person did it at this TED Talk at the end?
Yeah.
You know, we're not, woo!
Yeah.
Yeah, I was at Brandi Carlile on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And she...
Even with the symphony, eh?
Yeah, they did it. A bunch of people did it at the symphony.
Yeah.
And it's like, there must be the same person must do that at every single concert.
It could be, but there is a tradition within symphony halls of shouting bravo or
brava. No, this was at every... Yeah, because there's always somebody... Yeah. And it's always, I think they're doing that in case somebody's recording it, because then they can hear themselves. There's a Jackson Brown album. There's an annoying woman, probably with some type of, like a
withered hand.
Well, maybe a short leg.
Does this count as floundering?
Yeah. Amen, brother.
Preach it.
Preach it. I told you he was gone.
I was going somewhere.
Where? Off the rails?
No.
Why don't you toss it to Miley?
Miley, hello.